me, Brett Fish, and welcome to what is the final episode of season one of Out of the Fishbowl. I hope that you've enjoyed it. If you've managed to listen to all episodes, or if you're just tuning in today, I hope you're going to enjoy this one. And this one was inspired by a line from a Larry Norman song, Reader's Digest. And I think when I heard this song originally, a different band was doing a cover of it. But it's got amazing one-liners in it. And the one that stood out for me is this line that says, "The Beatles sang All You Need Is Love and then they broke up." And so we're going to be looking at a big, big topic for this last episode. And that's why I've decided to call it
Episode 7, All You Need Is Love.
What is love? It's a simple question, but I think one that has quite a complex answer. And I imagine if we interviewed a whole bunch of people on the streets and just sat down with them, sat down with you and spoke to you about this idea of what is love, I think we'd get a whole bunch of different answers and theories and stories. And I just want to look at some of those today. This isn't going to be a definitive capturing of what love is, but just some of the ideas that link to love. And I think if we took our lead from Hollywood in terms of determining what love is, we would come up with two main theories. That if you follow Hollywood, then love is either sex, this idea of scoring with somebody, and it's kind of a selfish needs meeting thing, because most of the time, I think, in Hollywood movies, the idea of sex is often about me, what I can get. It's not often viewed as this mutual thing. There's often a really strong kind of selfish resonance to me getting it, or to your mate getting it. And a lot of these coming-of-age movies about losing your virginity and the first time and how important that is, and all the pressure that's put onto that, and where you fit in social standings if you haven't done it, and all that kind of thing. But there's the sense of something that you go and get, something that you go and achieve, something that you manage to figure out. So the one side of Hollywood, I think, in terms of determining love, is this idea of sex, that love and sex are interchangeable, that they're the same thing. And I think the other thing that we get in many other spaces is this idea of romance, that love is all about feeling. This idea of serendipity, or the one, or soulmates, goosebumps, the idea of your first touch or your first kiss, and the electricity that kind of exists in those spaces. And those aren't bad things, and those are all true things, I think. And yet Hollywood seems to largely be about those two things. Love is sex, or it's romance. And occasionally maybe there's this idea that it's both of them. But those are two of the biggest narratives that I think Hollywood gives when it comes to love. And for me, when I think about love, while there's validity in those things, for me the first word that comes to mind is this idea of choice, followed quickly by the idea of action. And there's an old song by a band called DC Talk that was called Love is a Verb. And the pre-chorus to that song goes like this: "Words come easy, but don't mean much when the words they're saying we can't put trust in. We're talking about love in a different light, and if we all learned to love, it would be just right." This idea, words come easy, but they don't mean much. If there's no action, then words don't mean anything. And this idea of love being a verb, it's a doing word. It's something that takes place. It's not an idea. It's not even just a driver, so that sense of attraction, that sense of feeling. And it's not a physical act in terms of sex. Or it's not just that. I think love incorporates both sex and romance. But I love this idea of the importance of action and words lining up. And I think we see this in marriage, or even maybe just in any kind of relationship, where often saying the words in some ways is easy, but is it being backed up by our actions in both the big things and the small things. And I think sometimes the bigger things where it's not being backed up are easier to spot and maybe easier to fix even. We notice those when you're in a relationship with someone and you're doing this thing that isn't quite expressing love to them, or it's a thing that's expressing the opposite of that. It's easy to see that and to do work and to move past it. But often it's the little things, the irritating habits. So it could be the leaving up of the toilet seat, or the word that you say, or the name that you call someone, or just the attitude you have in a certain thing. And often those are smaller and more subtle, and often those are things that continue to grind against somebody and erode relationship if they're not kind of seen and addressed. And I think a lot of relationships, you deal with the big things, but it can be accumulation of the small things that start to actually cause problems. And so one of the big questions I'd have for you, if you're in a space of marriage or even just committed relationship, is, are you committing to self-reflection? Are you working on things in you that hurt other people? And that can be the person you love, the person you're in love with, but it can also be friends and family, just people around you. Like, is there a general sense of love to these people that makes you stand in front of the mirror and look at yourself and go, I do that, and that is hurtful, and I need to stop doing that. Or I do that, and that makes somebody feel uncomfortable, so let me work at doing that less. Let me work at eliminating that from my life. Now, there's two areas. I want to really look at a definition of love, and I think I have a good one to share with you. But before we get there, there are two areas that kind of fit on the side of this, but I think they're both still quite relevant, and so I just want to touch on them, and I'd just be interested to hear how these thoughts and ideas land for you. And so the first comes in this, where a group of friends kind of rip into each other, kind of insult each other or say things about each other, and then follow it up with this idea of just kidding, or I'm just joking. And I don't know if this is true, but when I was thinking about this, most of the spaces where I thought that this happens for me was in Christian spaces. So it's Christian leaders on a camp, or Christian leaders in a church, because those are spaces where I've been in. And I'm just wondering, does this happen in other spaces? And then the more I thought of it, I thought maybe it's a guy thing, because I don't know even in those spaces whether it's been women doing it to other women. It tends to be guys doing it. It's that macho sense of put someone down so you feel better. But then just say just kidding or just joking, because it's not a real thing. But for me, I find those things so problematic, because it's this idea that you're constantly saying negative things about another person, and then you kind of excuse it with this idea of, just joking, just kidding. But there's this constant, repetitive kind of attack on someone in a sense. And maybe this behind the scenes understanding, everyone understands that it's just how guys are, it's just how we are in this space, or nobody means anything by it. But if that thing keeps coming again and again and again, that can have an effect on you. If someone constantly calls you stupid or late or fat or whatever the word is, whatever your joke or the personality of who people have made you out to be, it could even be a nickname or something like that. If it keeps coming again and again and again, there is often truth rooted in jokes. And so even if people keep telling you they don't mean it, some of that stuff can stick, and some of that stuff can be really hurtful. And for me, like, I find it very problematic in an area where you could really encourage someone or inspire them or uplift them, that instead you choose to say nasty, hurtful things and then go, just kidding, it's just a joke, it's not real. Then if it's not real, for me, there's so much more value in building people up. We're in a world that constantly breaks us down. We're in a world that breaks us down based on gender or race or religious belief or where we were born or what country we live in or whatever. So many areas where we're just told we're not good enough, or there's a competitive spirit of those people are better, or the people that like that team are better. And so finding spaces where we can build each other up, where we can inspire, where we can encourage, where we can see the goodness in others and focus on that rather than these what feel to me like very lame ways of pulling people down, just feels so much more beneficial if we could lean on the upliftment. And another place where I see this is in jokes about marriage, which often happen on the day of a wedding. The uncle will get up and share a speech and totally diss marriage, or use the typical stereotypes of the joke. So this idea of, marriage is a ball and chain. And those are things that are often said. And if they said enough, then again, people start hearing them again and again. Everyone gets that it's a joke. It's not real. No one means anything. But if you hear ball and chain again and again and again. At some point, you're going to think, wow, this person I'm married is a ball and chain. They're holding me back. They're stopping me from being my true self. They all those things. And the jokes keep tapping away at your psyche and keep saying, well, maybe there's some truth in this. Maybe there's real. And so I am somebody that just hates when people joke about marriage, especially on the wedding day. And I will call people out. I'll challenge people. It's like, let's speak life into people. Joking about marriage, when marriage is such a hard thing, and I think many people have seen this during pandemic, marriage has taken a hit, many marriages. Relationships are difficult. Let's do what we can to make them easier, not harder, even for the sake of a joke. And I think those jokes, when it's a group of people or when it's in a marriage, I think that they display a lack of love. And I think we need to do better. So that's the one area. The second area is linked, and it's this myth of social media disconnect. This idea that I can be somebody online and I can be somebody different offline. And I think some people think that's a thing. I don't think it's a thing. And I certainly don't practice that as a thing for me. And the hope is that if you find me online, you will see the same person that you'll meet offline. And maybe some of the things that I find it a little bit easier to say on social media, they still happen offline, but maybe quietly in my head while I'm glaring at you. But who you see online is who you see offline. And so when you see me online, you'll see a picture of me, you'll see my real name, and I won't be hiding behind a facade and a number. And a lot of people use that. We've got this notion of trolls and people that go online and are just nasty. But a lot of the time hide behind fake personalities because they know that if they were themselves online as that person, people would look down on them. And so there's some kind of disconnect that happens. And the way I see it is if you're an ass online, you're an ass. That's it. You can't be like this total idiot, painful person online and be this amazing person offline. The same idea is expressed in this notion of if you are nice to your date but rude to the waiter, that you're not a nice person. Because I guess who you are at your worst shows in some ways, like I don't think everyone should be judged by their worst moment or their worst point, but I think who you are regularly at your worst gives an indication of who you are. If you're not working at that stuff, if you're not trying to be better, if you're not improving yourself in those areas. And my sister-in-law gave me this amazing present a few Christmases ago where it was this canvas poster that she made for my man cave that simply has the words, don't be a dick, on it. And I don't think she was giving it to me to tell me not to be a dick, although sometimes that may be her intention. But I think the idea of having that as a mantra, a reminder to me when I go online, don't be a dick. It's so easy to get into the space where other people attack you and you just attack them in the same way, where you become like the very people you oppose or are against. And I think if the whole world could have that as our mantra, I know some people find the words a little hectic, but hopefully you're okay with them. Don't be a dick. Like imagine if each of us, every single person on the planet woke up and that was our first line. Like today, don't be a dick. The world would be transformed if that's the only thing everybody believed and tried to put into practice, right? And so just... like we need to be more mindful that who we are online does matter. It's not the secret place that doesn't affect people. The words we put online hurt people. The words we put online can bully people, can cause people to kill themselves. And so we need to be more mindful of that and try and have less of a disconnect between what is going on online and what is happening offline. That the people being more authentic, being more the people that we are. And working on issues and areas of our life that aren't great. So as we move into this last part where I look at a bit of a definition of love and how I see love, I'm going to say something that I know is going to be a bit controversial. And I want to give it a bit of a disclaimer because I hope you're not going to turn off and go running. And I want to read a passage to you out of the Bible. Don't go away. Listen, hear me out on this. That when I say the Bible, I know there's two extremes of people. There's those who agree with it and believe in it and will be super excited about this. But there's a lot of people for whom Christianity and the idea of the Bible has been a destructive, broken, messed up thing and has caused a lot of pain. And so the moment you hear the Bible, you're reaching towards that switch off button. But I just want to ask you just to pause for a moment, but don't pause the podcast because otherwise you won't hear what I'm saying. But just imagine... for a second, forget the Bible, forget the religious implications and everything else, but imagine for a second that this piece I'm going to read out to you is from a book of wisdom. And then after I've read it out, then you have the right to accept or reject it as wisdom. You can go, wow, that was amazing. That was a beautiful piece of wisdom. That's true in and of itself without needing to relate it to the rest of the Bible. And if it's not something you enjoy, if I read out and you go, wow, that's rubbish, then feel free to reject it. But I find that this passage for everybody, I think there's something really valuable in it. And it's part of a letter that a guy called Paul writes to this church trying to teach them about love. And there are two parts to it. And a lot of people skip the first part and go on to the second, but I'm going to read both of them to you. The first part goes like this, and also don't trip over the religious language. Just hear the heart of the message and what it's trying to say and see if it applies to you. I love how it starts. And now I will show you the most excellent way. This guy's excited about what he's going to say. So the first part goes like this. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. So there's a lot in there. There's a lot of religious language in there, but don't worry about that. Basically, the essence of what it's saying is if I am this or if I do this but don't have love, the consequences of that or the meaning of that is I'm a resounding gong, I'm a clanging cymbal, I'm something that just makes a noise and is irritating but doesn't have a purpose. Otherwise it says I am nothing or I gain nothing. And I think for me, as an introduction to this thing, we're going to look at in the second part, well, what is love? But it's saying the essential nature of love is that if love is lacking, then everything amounts to very little. We're either going to be a loud noise, or we're going to be nothing, or we're going to be gaining nothing. Love is the essence of everything. And so let me read the second part to you. It goes like this. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Now, as you're listening to that list of aspects of love, and I'll read it again in a moment, there's something that stands out to me. If we take just the first one, love is patient, if we go back to those original ideas from Hollywood of love being sex or love being romance, and we think of this idea of love is patient something that you ever feel like doing? Like you're standing in a long line and you're like, oh, I'm so glad that I get to be patient today. I don't think it is. And I think most of the things on that list, not easily angered, not rude, not self-seeking, are not things that naturally come to us. They are things that are a choice. I remember there's that moment in one of the Almighty movies, I think it was Evan Almighty, where the God character is speaking to him and he says, if you ask me for patience, I don't give you patience, but I give you situations in which you will have to be patient. So situations teach us patience. Patience is not something that we ever go, oh, I want to do that. Well, maybe you do. But it's not something that you feel, I feel like being patient, because it means that you are in circumstances where you have to be patient, where you have to be waiting, or you have to be being calm with someone or not losing your temper. And so this whole list is a list of choices. And it's saying that love, different aspects of love are things that you need to choose, are things that you need to work on. They're not just feelings. They're not just, oh, I feel patient today, because that never happens. And I really believe that this list, and this list isn't kind of all-inclusive. This isn't like everything love is, but I think it gives us an idea of a beginning of what love can be about. And so if we tie that to the fact that like Jesus when he's asked, what is the greatest command? And we go into another aspect of the Bible. Don't stress about Jesus and what you think of Jesus or not. But this religious figure, when he's asked, what is the most important thing? His summaried answer was love God and love people. That's the most important command. Not make a church, not convert people, not do anything else. Love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love people. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. And he unpacked this idea of loving people as loving your neighbor, not just the person who lives next to you, but anybody you come across. Loving your enemy, which is a huge one. We could spend an entire episode on that. And loving the marginalized. So those who are hungry and thirsty and in jail and in hospital and naked. Like, that was the essence of what Jesus was trying to say Christianity is meant to be all about. And we can talk about that for days. But if we're thinking about love and we're thinking about this command, and another way that I love to see it expressed is in this other line that Jesus says, serve one another in love. So think about someone you're in relationship with. If I'm married to somebody and I love myself and I look after myself and my own needs, then my needs will be met. And if my wife looks after her own needs, then they'll be met. And so at the end of the day, we all end up with our needs being met. However, once you add love into the mix and this idea of serve one another in love, if I start serving my wife and loving her and she at the same time is loving me and serving me, then we're meeting each other's needs. And at the end of the day, both of our needs are still being met. But there's been this thing of relationship that's been added to that, because you've got this crossing over of we're looking out for each other, we've got each other's backs, we're cheering each other on. And so I think there's so much power in that, of this thing of love being a choice, and the choice we can make to serve each other in love. So I'm going to read that passage again, but one thing that I do sometimes to see how I'm doing in love is I read this passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And instead of love, I put my name into its place. Wherever it says love or it, and I pose it as a question. So if I start with Brett is patient, that's a question. Is Brett patient, or is there an aspect of love that I'm lacking right now? So maybe as I do it, maybe you can think of your name in those spaces. Brett is kind. Brett does not envy. Brett does not boast. Brett is not proud. Brett is not rude. Brett is not self-seeking. Brett is not easily angered. If you have ever seen me on the hockey field, you know that that is one that I constantly have to work on and go back to and try to figure out. Brett keeps no record of wrongs. Brett does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Brett always protects. Brett always trusts. Brett always hopes. Brett always perseveres. Brett never fails. So I would look up that passage and maybe write it down and stick it up on your mirror and let it be something you go back to from time to time and stick your name in there and see how you're doing. And just the last line of that, love never fails. That sounds like absolute ridiculousness. That sounds like it can't possibly be true. But I think what's important to notice is that it's not saying love doesn't make mistakes. It's saying love never fails. Now, we all make mistakes. But this idea of love never failing means that love never gives up. Love will commit. Love will keep on coming back. Love will do self-reflection, will stand looking in the mirror and continue to work on the things that are holding us back. Love will continue to get up every day and choose the other person or people or communities. And I think that is so huge. And at the end of this whole passage, there's a line that says this, and now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Another quote that I read and shared on the internet this morning was by a guy called Paul Tillich, and I have no idea who he is. And he says this: the first duty of love is to listen. And I think there's something really powerful in that. I work with an organization called Heartlines, and we do a lot of storytelling stuff. And our three foundation pillars are the words ask, listen, and tell. And the idea of the listen in there is this idea of saying to somebody else, I see you, and you have worth. Your story is important. Your story is worth listening to. You have significance, and I'm going to commit to sitting and listening with you. The first duty of love is to listen. It's such a key thing. And then in pandemic times, especially as we find ourselves and have for the last year or two, is this idea that love shows up. Love shows up, and it might be in connection where that's possible. So physically, it might be physically showing up. It might be needs, dropping off a bag of groceries with a neighbor that you know doesn't have money, putting some electricity on the phone of a guy who comes to your gate who doesn't have the ability to get it. Or it could be digitally by sending words or voice or video to somebody to remind them that you're there. And I try to do that often for my nieces and my nephews and friends of ours that have children. Send them a voice note or a video to just remind them that I miss them and I look forward to hanging out, but that I see them and that I'm thinking of them and that I miss them. Love shows up. Love sees people. And so whether it's somebody at the traffic lights who's begging for money or trying to sell a big issue magazine, whether it's somebody who comes to your door or your gate begging for food, whether it's people on social media, love sees people. And that is one of the most cost-free things we can do for other people is just see them, just acknowledge their presence. We don't have to give money. We don't have to buy something, but just smiling at somebody and maybe asking their name and just greeting them. On social media, I find it the easiest thing when somebody is clearly lonely or somebody is celebrating a birthday or somebody's just lost someone. Like they share it online and it's so easy to just spend 30 seconds jumping on, even if they're a stranger, just saying, hey, happy birthday, and being creative with it, or just acknowledging the loss that they're sharing online. And nothing moves me more, I think, especially during these times, of seeing somebody that said, hey, I just lost my mom, and then seeing like 800 replies of people, many of whom are going to be strangers, just reaching out and saying, I see you. I see you. You're not alone in this. And I think that's so powerful. And I think to wrap this all up, love chooses the other. Love chooses the other. So is love sex? Yes, that can be a part of it. Can you have love without sex? I think so. Is love romance? Absolutely. Romance is a part of love. Can you have love without romance? I think so. But can you have love without choice and without action? I don't think that's possible. And so the challenge for us all is to be people who love well, to be people that love authentically, whether we are online or offline, and to be people that see each other, to be people who show up, and to be people who try to serve each other in love. And that's it. That's a wrap for season one of Out of the Fishbowl. I just want to thank you for tuning in. And I guess if it turns out that anyone has found these helpful or enjoyable, then I might be back for Out of the Fishbowl Season 2. But in the meantime, thanks for sharing the space with me. I hope that you've had things to think about, and I hope that we will continue to try and be better people in the spaces we find ourselves in. That we'll continually try thinking outside of the box, out of the fishbowl, this idea of thinking of new ways that things haven't been done in, and new ways of connection and seeing people and building and inspiring and creating. Anyway, thank you from me, Brett Fish.